Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, seven lines down. Amar Rav Yosef, Surba Mirabonon, a young Talmud Chacham, Ovid Dino Lenafshe, he can adjudicate his own case, Milto de Psikale, and something that is definitive, there's no question about what the halacha is. Rishonim take different approaches as to what this is referencing. I mean, that does it reference a regular monetary case? That's the way that Rashi over here suggests that Shevadai Hulo Velo Safek, there's no Safek in this issue, and therefore he feels that he can adjudicate the case, he can paskin, and then demand that the money is returned. I mean, everybody can do that for themselves, demand that the money is returned, but here he can actually put the person into Nidui for violating that Psak Halacha as if it was a court case. Others suggest that it is the right of the young Talmud Chacham to put a person into Nidui if they have affronted him or disrespected him, if it's a milta de psikale, if it's something that's so obvious, then it's even binding on his Rebbe. I mean, that before we said that the nidui of a Yamuk Talmud Chacham is binding on everybody, not on his Rebbe necessarily because it's for his kavod. But if it's an obvious affront, something that so clearly he can put the person to nidui for, then his Rebbe is also bound by it. That's another possibility of how Rabbi Yosef speaks. The Rosh speaks about the obvious problem, which is, isn't he a nogea b'davar? Isn't he a nogea b'davar? So how can he give up psak halacha on monetary matters? Therefore, the Rosh says that it's not about monetary matters because he can't, like anybody else, you have to get a proper adjudication, independent party to adjudicate over here, not do it himself. So obviously that would be the issue with what Rashi is speaking about. But it might be that, for instance, in certain Piskei Halacha, where it's so obvious, we have this also with regards to Orach Chaim. When it comes to Orach Chaim, in general, you're supposed to ask your Rav about Halachot of Orach Chaim. But if it's a Milta de Psikale, it's something that's so obvious and so clear, then you don't necessarily have to ask the Rav. Or if someone asks you, you can say it's in Shulchan Aruch, it's in the Mishnah Berurah. It's something that's clearly written, and it's not something where there is a fake about it. In that case, a person can give direction to where the psak is or give understanding of the psak, even though they're not a rav or they didn't ask the rav. So it could be that that's what the type of psikodle is over here, where it's so obvious that there's no need for adjudication. So that's a possibility of what it's speaking about, because that's why Rashi and some of the other Rishonim suggest that it's real psak alocha. So there was this young Talmud Chacham that there are rumors circulating about him. These are obviously negative rumors that are circulating about him. Then, Amar Rav Yehuda, Hechali Avid. What do we do about this? L'shamtei, we're going to put him into Nidui. Tzrichale Rabbanon. The Rabbanon need him. I mean, the Rabbanon in his town or his city were relying on him for his Torah, both to learn Torah from him and for his Piskei Halacha. So if we put him into Nidui, you're going to handicap the Chachamim or the Rabbanon in his city. Lo L'shamtei, if we don't put him into Nidui, it's going to lead to a Chilul Hashem. Because here, he's known as a young Talmud Chacham, and yet there are all these Shmuot Ra'ot, these negative rumors that are circulating about this individual. And people are going to say, this is what a Talmud Chacham is about, this is what happens when you learn Torah, it's going to lead to a Chilul Hashem. So they want to put him into Shamto so people know that this is not the way to act, this is not the way to conduct oneself. The Gemara makes an assumption. When something becomes so loud that it's spoken about so often and the rumors are so obvious, that already is an indication of fact or an element of truth to it, and that we've seen this before, that you also have to be Nikiyim, Meinei Hashem, Umi Yisrael. That a person has to conduct themselves in such a manner that not only are they right in the eyes of Hashem, but that other people understand what they're doing and understand their behavior. So he's allowed to defend himself, but if he can't defend himself or he just dismisses them, then there's a problem here because this becomes a public issue. And if people speak about a Rav in this manner or speak about a Talmud Chacham in this matter, they're going to connect between learning Torah and this type of behavior, which we don't want. We don't want people connecting between the two. So Rabbi says, Rabbi Barachana, do you know what to do here? We're stuck. We have this Talmud Chacham, this young Talmud Chacham. We don't know what to do. So Amalei Achamaya Rabbi Yochanan. This is what Rabbi Yochanan says. It's a beautiful line. My dichtiv. What is meant by the pasuk in Malachi kisifte kohen nishmiru dat? The Torah yivakshu mipiu ki malach Hashem tzvakotu. So the lips of the Kohen will guard the faith. V'torah yivakshu mipio, they will ask for Torah from his mouth, meaning they'll learn Torah from him. Why? Ki malach Hashem tzvakotu, because he's like the angel of God. Im domeh harav, the malach Hashem, if the teacher is like an angel of God, yivakshu Torah mipiv, then you can learn Torah from him. V'imlav, ha yivakshu Torah mipiv, then do not learn from him. And Rashi says, the mutav lo yofim, meaning better not to learn from him. Meaning that the nature and the character of the individual has impact on his Torah. And therefore, you only can learn Torah from someone who conducts themselves, kemalach Hashem tzvakot, because that gives you the pureness and the right Torah. Person who does not conduct themselves in that manner, person who has questionable character, to learn Torah from them is problematic, because that also influences their Torah, influences their hashkafa, and therefore he says, better to shut him down. Put him into nidui, no more learning from this Rav, even though he's a big Talmud Chacham, but we have to have suspicions not only about his character, but you have to have suspicions about his Torah as well. B'shamtei Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda put him into nidui, he listens to Rabbi Bar Chana's quote, the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and he puts him into nidui. Sof ichlash Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda fell ill. Usually when they say ichlash, he's weak, means fell ill, but deathly ill, means he's on his deathbed. Atar Rabbanon Lishulei Bey, the Rabbanon came to be Mevaker Cholim to see how he was doing. V'atohi unami behadayu. This individual who he had put into Nidoi came along with them to visit Rabbi Yehuda. Kachazi Rabbi Yehuda, chayich. When Rabbi Yehuda saw them, this individual smiled, he laughed. So Amalei, the Talmud Chacham that he put into Shamte, into Nidoi, says to Rabbi Yehuda, lo mistayich de Shamte, lahau gavra, it's not enough that you put this individual, speaking in the third person, but about himself, it's not enough that you put me into Nidoi, elachuche inami chayich mi, but that now you're also laughing or smiling at me? I mean, that why are you taking joy in the fact that I come here and you put me into Nidoi? Amalei, labididach mechaichna. I'm not smiling or laughing at you. Ella, dechiazilna lahau alma. When I reach Olam Haba, bedicha da'atai. I have a clear conscience. Da'afilu legabra kavateich lo chanifelei. That even for a person like you, of your stature, I did not patronize, that I did not bend or cower before you, and I put you into Nidoi. Meaning that he felt that he was justified in his action, so justified in his action that he didn't back away from it and didn't back down, even though others were not in favor of this because it affected them. I mean, the Rabbanon in his city needed this individual, and yet Rabbi Yehuda didn't back down because of the memory that he had gotten from Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yehuda says, I feel good about what I did. I feel like I can go up to Shemayim with a clear conscience because I did the right thing. Nach nafshei de Rabbi Yehuda. Sure enough, Rabbi Yehuda passes away from this illness. Ata the Beit Midrasho, this Talmud Chacham again, who was in Nidui, now comes to Beit Midrash. Amalu, surely, be matir for me the Nidui. Rabbi Yehuda passed away now, be matir the Nidui for him. Amalei Rabbonon, Gavra Duchoshiv, Rabbi Yehuda, Lekahacha, Delishrelach. Says, we don't have someone of Rabbi Yehuda's stature to unwind the Nidui. He put you in Nidui, we need someone of his stature to unwind it. Ela Zilagabe, the Rabbi Yehuda Nesiah. Go to Rabbi Yehuda Nesiah. Rabbi Yehuda Nesiah is the grandson of Rabbi. He's an Amora, grandson of Rabbi, so he would be a contemporary of Rabbi Yehuda, probably a drop older than Rabbi Yehuda. The Lishreilach, that he will be matter you. So Azal the Kamei, he went to Rabbi Yehuda Nesiah. Amalei the Rabbi Ami. So Rabbi Yehuda Nesiah says to Rabbi Ami, his right-hand man, Pok Ayin Bidine. Look, go look into the matter. See what the circumstances are. Imi bai the Mishralei, Sharilei. And if we should be matter him, or not be matir, meaning that if you think it's right, we'll be matir him. Ayin Rabbi Ami Bidine. Rabbi Ami looked into the matter. Sover the Mishrule. He thought that it is appropriate here to be matir the Nidoi. It's not clear what the conclusion was, whether they went and looked into the matter and then the rumors were incorrect, or that this individual had done tshuva. It's not clear why he felt that it was already, the time had come to be matir the Nidoi. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani. Al Raglav, so Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani gets up in the Beit Midrash, Ramar, Umash Shivcha Shabbat Rabbi, Lo Nagu Chachamim Kalut Rosh Beniduya, that when it comes to the maidservant in the house of Rabbi, she put someone into Nidoi, everybody respected it, and the Chachamim followed her Nidoi, Shalosh Shanim, for 3 years, Yehuda Chavarenu, Yehuda our friend, meaning Rabbi Yehuda, Chad Kam V'Kama, that we have to uphold his Nidoi, meaning that this maidservant in Rabbi's house imposed Nidoi for 3 years, and everybody abided by it. So here, Rabbi Yehuda did something. You ought to come in and unwind it. That doesn't make any sense. So Amar Rabbi Zeira is very interesting. As he says, Maidi Kaman, what happened today? Da'ata idna haisaba bebe midrasha. What's this old man doing in the Beit Midrash today? Da'akamashane lo'ata. For many years, he hasn't been here. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani was already older, and he wasn't showing up in the Beit Midrash on a regular basis. He says, what happened that all of a sudden today he showed up in the Beit Midrash? Of all days, what's Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani doing here? Shmamina, lo bibayi, lo mishrile. He says, it sounds like that this is ke'ilo, a message from heaven, not to be matir, lo sharile. They were not matir him. So he saw this as a siman. The fact that Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani shows up in the Beit Midrash when he hasn't shown up for years, and then he's the one who speaks out against being matir the nidoy, that was a siman mishamayim, that they didn't want them to be matir the nidoy, because he shows up an unusual event, and he speaks up. So Rabbi Zeira said, I'm not going to be matir the nidoy, even though Rabbi Ami felt it might have been appropriate. He saw the effect of Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani coming to the Beit Midrash and speaking out against him as a siman not to do this. Nafak yikabachi, he went out crying. Va'azil ata zibura v'tarke amte, he went out, and then a wasp or a bee of some sort went ahead and bit him or stung him, amte, right, on his private parts. V'shochiv, and he passed away. So that we see as maybe a midah keneged midah. And the rumors about him, as Tosafot notes over here, were rumors about an Aveira or Znut. And therefore the punishment or his death is precipitated by a sting or a bite in his private parts. Maybe even justifying what Rabbi Yehuda had done or showing that the Nidoy was appropriate. So now he passed away. Ailu alamarto de Chaside. They went to put him in the cave of the Chasidim, of those that were righteous. They wanted to bury him there with the other Talmidei Chachamim. Velo kiblu. So they wouldn't accept him there. Seems that either the cave was closed or a snake blocked the opening. Something caused the problem or didn't allow them to bury him in there. They were rejecting him being placed in there. Ailu lamarto de Daine. Then they brought him into the cave of the Dayonim. Vikiblu. And they accepted him over there. Why? So that's the Gemara I was going to ask in 1 second. But it's clear from here that the cave of the Dayonim is in a lower level than the cave of the Chasidim. So the Chasidim is a higher standard. They would not accept him. But with regards to the cave of the Dayonim, they were willing to accept him. My time up. Why? Now here it says, the Ovid ki Rabbi Eloi. Because he did like Rabbi Eloi. Tosafot brings two gears to oath. There's two gears, possible gears to oath. The way that we have it now, it's explaining why the Dayonim accepted him. Because he did like Rabbi Eloi. The alternative gears would be the Avar ad Rabbi Eloi. He did not keep Rabbi Eloi, which would be explaining why the cave of the Chasidim did not accept him. Depending which the Girsa is, if it's that he violated Rabbi Eloi, it's explaining why he wasn't accepted by the Chasidim. If he upheld the position of Rabbi Eloi, this is why the cave of the Dayanim accepted him. So we'll go with the Girsa that says Avad, that he did do it, which is Titania. Rabbi Eloi Omer, Imroa Adam, Shitro Mitgaber Alav. If a person sees that his Yetzer is getting the best of him, Yelech Makom Shem Akirin Oto. He should go to a place where people do not know him, where he's not recognized. Ve'yobash Shchorim. He'll put on black clothing. Vita Tev Shchorim. And he'll wrap himself up in black. Yaseh Mashalibo Chafetz. He'll do whatever his desire is. Ve'al Yechalel Shem Shemayim Fahesya. And there should not be a public desecration of Hashem's name. So here you have a machloket amongst the Rishonim as to what the Gemara means over here. The Gemara says that if you have a desire, if you have to sin, go ahead, wear black, take yourself to a place where there's nobody knows you, and go ahead and do the sin. Is that literally? Is that what it means, the Gemara? We have two deot. We'll read the Rabbeinu Chananel first. The Rabbeinu Chananel says, "V'yase mashlibu chafetz, kamo achila v'shtia b'minei zemer ukiyotz v'hem." Means eating, drinking, and listening to music, like going to a bar, going to some of these things. Not necessarily sinning, but putting yourself in an atmosphere where sin is usually precipitated. About dvar aveira sheish bad din adam udin shamayim, a real aveira that involves ben adam lechaviro or ben adam lemakom, v'afilu chayvi laivim, o chayvi asei, even if it's just a lot asei or just an asei, v'koshkein amalash yisurah nisur olam, certainly things that are serious yisurim, chas v'shalom shehitir Rabbi Eloi. There's no way that Rabbi Eloi would allow such a thing. Vafilu b'seiter, even privately. El davar shipirashnu lamanu hu shamad asot. If you get dressed in this way, and you bring yourself to this, then what's going to happen? He'll do what he wants, but there's a protection provided to him because he got dressed up like this that he won't sin. that we allow him to do this, but we assume that because he got dressed like this and because of what he did, it will be mavriach the yetzro, lashlim tavato. This will chase away the yetzara and get rid of this desire. Came in shra'at smo, levush shchorim v'tov shchorim. So that sees himself dressed in black and covered in black, mishtaber yetzro. It breaks his yetzer, v'nimna, v'eino oseh. It will stop him and he won't do it. And this, Tzurim Yerabonan did like Rabbi Eli. He acted in this manner. So even though he went out and partied a little bit, didn't ever sin really, but he was in places of maybe ill repute or places that were necessarily nice, but he never actually sinned because he acted like Rabbi Eli. The important thing here is the Ayachalel Shem Shemayim Farhesia. And if a person has to do it, it's better to do it in a manner that is private than to do it in a manner that is public. Why create a public Chil Hashem when a person can do a private Chil Hashem? It's not that it justifies it or makes it better, it's just that there is a secondary impact of what you're doing, which is that if a person is going to sin anyway, then better off to do it in a manner that doesn't create a Chil Hashem than in a manner that does create a Chil Hashem. But here, the Rabbeinu Chananel says clearly, no, that you're not going to sin. It's a preventative measure. It's a manner to break the person down so that he doesn't end up succumbing to his Yetzara. And Tosafot quotes the Rabbeinu Chananel saying that this will be Machnia Libo. This will cause him to not follow his Yetzara. On the other hand, Rashi over here brings two interpretations. He brings, first of all, Mashli Bo Chafetz, Avera. Behove Makuno To Sham Lecha Chil Hashem. That's one explanation. And the second explanation is Varmalan Rabbi Mishum Rabbi Rav Haigon. Then he quotes in the name of Rav Haigon. V'yaseh Mashli Bo Chafetz, Rutsi Lomash, Devaidai Kevin Shalavush Skorim. Ani Areba Devar Shenu Chafetz Mikan Ve'elach Ba'avera. It's like almost like the Rambam's explanation of that Libo Chafetz. What does his heart really want to do? It wants to do the right thing. So Mashli Bo Chafetz means it'll help him to do the right thing because he wears the black. And that will stop him from doing the Avira. He has a promise that the Yetzer Hara will be subdued and he'll be okay. So Rashi brings two interpretations. Clear, the secondary interpretation of Rav Haigon is similar to Rabbeinu Chananel, which is he won't end up sinning. Rabbeinu Chananel is a little different. He goes into the environment and then he doesn't sin. Here, the Rav Haigon says it will stop him entirely from sinning because this is, if you act in this manner, it'll break you down to the point that you won't want to sin. But according to the first day on Rashi, it sounds like he's going to sin. He actually can go and do the sin. And that is the Machloket HaRishonim here, whether we're actually saying you can go and sin, or is it just a mechanism for stopping you from sinning? And here, the Gemara in Kedushin also brings it, and there Rashi and Tosafot argue also there about whether it means actually to violate the sin, do the Avera, or is it simply a preventative measure? But now, since he practiced like Rabbi Eloi, therefore, he was allowed into the Makom HaDayanim, into the lower level, not into the highest level, because he couldn't be considered a chassid, but enough that he was put into the place of a Dayanim. Black is symbolic of death, of negativity, meaning that it's a way to self-demean. It's a way for a person to take themselves down, and to not wearing color, not wearing white. A person of leadership and stature wears white. So here, wearing black is taking the person, being machniyam, humble, humility. It's a way to engender a change in the person's attitude. Shifcha shel Beit Rabbi Mahi. What is the story of the Shifcha Beit Rabbi that was quoted by Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani as evidence of the fact that we keep a nidui even of the maidservant of Rabbi? The Amta Beit Rabbi, because the maidservant of Rabbi's house, Chazite Lau Gavra, she saw this individual of a mochi libno agadol. He was hitting his son who was older, already of age. Amra lehavi au gavra bishamto. She says, this individual should put in nidoy, the ga'avar mishum lifnei iver lo titen mechshol. Because it's violating lifnei iver lo titen mechshol. Titanya, evabraita, lifnei iver lo titen mechshol. What is an example of not putting a stumbling block in front of a blind person? Obviously, it doesn't mean literally that way. It means to cause someone else to do an aveira. So this, what's a classic example of someone causing someone else to do an aveira? But makel libno agadol, akatuv midaber. Talking about a case where a person's hitting his son who's already older. So most of the Rishonim learn, what does that mean? What's the problem here? Kevan de Gadolhu, since he's already older, bigger, Shemem va'eit be'aviv, v'avileit iu machshilo. Maybe he will kick his father. Now you can take that in one of two ways. He can literally kick his father. And the problem here is that he's going to hit back. That once the child gets big enough or old enough, then if provoked by the parents, he's going to hit back. And it's going to be in violation of the Torah's requirement not to hit one's parents. So here, if the father is going and hitting the child, he's triggering, provoking, instigating the child to hit back. once he reaches a certain age. So at a younger age, it's not an issue. But at an older age, if the child is too old where the hitting is actually going to provoke a response in a way that they're going to hit back and cause a problem, then that's lifnei iver lo titen mechshol. If they're younger, then it's a directive manner. The other possibility is mibait, you could say, is that he kicks off the yoke of heaven, which is that if the father's hitting him or he's using a strong arm tactic when the child's already older, the reaction of the child is not going to be to listen, but to turn turned off and to then leave the fold. That's another possibility. I probably think that's probably a more modern interpretation of the word mivayit. I think in their time, mivayit, they literally meant that he'd kick away, that he would hit his father back. It's interesting, the Rashi in the Ktav Yad says that he'll be mifatpeit. So the modern word mifatpeit means to speak or murmur or speak about him. So there seems like he's explaining that lifnei iver lo titen mechshol is that he's going to cause the child to speak about the parent in a negative manner, that he's going to speak lashon hara, he's going to curse the parent. It's going to be something that's not in the physical realm, but in the response, the way that he speaks about it, or the way he responds verbally to it, is going to cause the problem. So whatever the reason is, that by hitting the child who is too old to be hit in that sense, then you're going to trigger a response which is going to cause a problem, and you are responsible for that, because the hitting is what precipitates the problem. So you see from this that the amto, the maidservant of Rabbi, put this individual into nidui because he was acting inappropriately. She put him into nidui. She declared the nidui, and the Rabbanan respected her nidui. I mean, she was given stature and status with her ability to put a nidui, and every people abided by it. So that's why he felt that it was appropriate that if Rabbi Yehuda gave a nidui, that we abide by that nidui. We're not going to just abrogate it. So now, Rish Lakish dava mintar pardesa. Rav Eshkes was guarding an orchard. Seems like that was his job. He was the shomer of the Pardes. Atu gavra v'kachal te'ene. This individual came and was eating fruits from the tree. Rama be'kala v'lo ashkach be'i. Tried to chase him away and said, get away, this is in your field. Why are you eating the fruits? The guy ignored him. Amar l'aviyahu gavra b'shamta. He puts him into nidui. Amar l'ay, adarabo. The guy turns back to him and says, l'aviyahu gavra b'shamta. He says, you should be in nidui, not me. If I am chayav mamon, meaning you're right that I might be monetarily obligated over here because I'm stealing or I'm taking the fruits. Nidui minit chayav tilcha. Since when am I chayav nidui? So this is an interesting question. Tosafot over here brings two different explanations as to how to read this. Tosafot says, afal pi shemishamtim bavur mamon. We know, we've seen the previous Gemaras that you do put people into nidui because of monetary manners. That is, Yesh Lamar, Shailo Likro to the Beit in Tchila, Shailo Yipara. That you have to be given due process first. You can't put him into Nidoy because he's stealing money and not listening until you bring him through the court system. If you bring him through the court system and then he doesn't pay, then he doesn't listen, then he's deserving of Nidoy. And even there we said yesterday's daf that you have to give him a warning Monday, Thursday, Monday. I mean, there's a whole process by which putting a person into Nidoy when it's a monetary manner. And Rish Lakish was wrong here in putting him into Nidoy because he didn't have a adjudication. He didn't have due process. And that's what he responds to him. He says, look. It seems to be that Rav Yosef's statement above about the Yom Talmud Chacham was referencing something that was a chutzpah or some sort of affront to the kavod of the Yom Talmud Chacham. It might be that he is in contempt of court, but it's something that was directed at the Yom Talmud Chacham. Over here, problem is not because he is contempt of the Talmud Chacham, Rish Lakish. He just thinks Rish Lakish is a shomer. And is ignoring the guard. So and for that reason, I think that it's not talking about a chutzpah, it's really talking about a pure monetary matter. In that case, you have to take him through due process. That's one way that Tosfot explains it. Then, he says, B'shem Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says something interesting. Shamati, shayu regilim b'oto makom, shokhlim bilanot b'noten damim. That in that place, the minhag makom was that people ate, and then they paid the money back afterwards. Even though, in general, what would you conclude from this? That it is gezel. If you normally, if in any other situation, if you took and then paid back later, that's considered to be gezel. But in this town, that was the minhag that the people took and then paid later. Rish Lakish was unaware of this practice, and he put him to nidoy, but he was wrong about that. So now, what's going on? Atu the Beit Midrasha. So he comes to the Beit Midrash. Amrulei, the people in the Beit Midrash, tell Rish Lakish, shelo nidoy, shelchai nidoy. He's right. His nidoy takes effect. Because he was justified in putting you into Nidoy because you put him into Nidoy, which was wrong. And your Nidoy doesn't have any effect because of either one of the reasons that Tosfot says, either he's missing due process or the problem that in this city that was the practice. So Maita Kante. So what can I do to rectify the situation? It says, Zilagabe, Didlishrilach. Goes, go ask the guy to be matir the nidu that he put you into. It says, Lo Yidanale, I don't know who he is. So Amrle, Zilagabe Nasiya Didlishrilach. Go to the Nasi, go to the exilarch, and he'll release you. Tatanya nidu of any odea min nidu. He was put into excommunication, into nidui, and they don't know who put him into excommunication. Go to the Nasi, being the Nasi is the representative of all the people. Since he's the representative of all the people, he can act on behalf of all the people. Obviously, he needs to look into the matter and decide whether it's worthy or not of releasing the person from the nidui, but he has that authority to release the people from the nidui, acting on behalf of the people as a whole. So, Amar Rav Huna, Bu'ushri Itkinu, Af Beitin Shesarach, the head of the court, if something went wrong, Eimin Adinoto, they do not put him into nidui. Ella Omer Lo, they hint to him. Hikaved v'shev beitecha. Listen, just lower yourself down, weigh yourself in, and stay home. It's an indication like, take yourself out of the picture, back off. So without putting him in the nidui, they hint to him that this is what he should be doing himself. Chazar v'sarach, if he goes still, ignores their advice and continues to be in violation, minadinoto mipnei chilul Hashem. Then we put him into nidui, despite the fact that it's a problem to put the av beit din into nidui, nevertheless, if he continues to act in this manner, then there's a secondary problem, which is the chilul Hashem aspect of it. So that's what we saw before, that chilul Hashem is going to trump in the end, and we're going to put him into nidui because we don't want people learning from this. We don't want people becoming disillusioned by the activities or the behavior of a certain individual. So we have to take action. At some point, we have to take action. We give him a little more room. We give him a little bit of latitude because of his position. But that's it. If he doesn't back down, then we have to act. Upligid de Reish Lakish. This argues in Reish Lakish. Tamar Reish Lakish. Tamid Chacham Shesarach. Eimenu Adinu Tobe Farhesia. Tamar Chacham that is in violation and needs to put in nidoy. We don't do it publicly. We do it in a private manner. She says, "V'kishalta yom, v'kashel gam navi imecha laylo." Meaning that if you tripped up today, and the navi will also trip up with you at night. What does it mean at night? Kisau kelayla, cover it up like night. So the problem needs to be addressed, but we tried to do it in private in order to avoid the chilul Hashem. So yeah, there's two sides to the chilul Hashem here. There's the chilul Hashem if we let the activity continue without putting the individual into nidoy. But there also can be a chilul Hashem when we publicly put the person into nidoy, because that also makes it into a public spat and brings people in on the fact that this Talmid Chacham may not be acting appropriately. So we have to do it in a manner which both protects from a chilul Hashem in putting the person into nidoy, but also prevents the chilul Hashem of this individual's actions from continuing. Now, if the person doesn't abide by it, then you're going to have to do it publicly because he doesn't abide. So the question is, does a hint help? And that's the question here. Do you just hint at him by saying it? Or do you hint at it, do you do it by just putting him privately into nidoy? One of those two ways would try to prevent Talmid Chacham from continuing his activity. If he continues to do it, and now it's going to become a problem of a public chilul Hashem, then you got to put him into nidui and prevent in a public manner in order to prevent the problem from expanding and becoming a bigger chilul Hashem. What you're suggesting is that if you sweep it under the cover here by just not declaring it publicly, then that's a problem. The answer is yes, if it persists. If the Talmid Chacham reacts and he stops the behavior, then it doesn't need to be a public activity because he stopped. It really had effect on him. And then you're not sweeping under the cover because the situation was rectified. The problem of sweeping under the cover is if he continues to act this way and they don't publicize it, then it's a serious issue because then they are sweeping under the cover. And there's no justification for that behavior. That's number one. Number two is there are certain activities where there's good evidence psychologically that people will go back to that activity and there's almost no way to prevent it. Even with serious therapy, it's very questionable. And that comes to abuse of minors. The abuse of minors, it's very difficult to unwind it, and it's very problematic to cover it up, because those type of people just go from place to place, and they are predators, and they will prey on people where they don't know. And so there might be a need to publicize it right away, or to make sure that it's taken care of right away. So you have to understand the situation. You have to look at the situation. And yes, it is a serious problem. And there are bodies and there are movements trying to prevent that from continuing and to speak out on these issues so that the victims do not continue to be more victims because you're trying to protect or cover up these situations. Right? Marzutra Chasida, Kimichayev Tzumer Mirabonon Shamto, when a young Talmid Chacham was chayav nidui, bereisha mishmei nafshe, first he would put himself into nidui, v'adar mishmei lididei, and then he would put the Talmid Chacham into nidui. Kihava ayel bishpuzei, when he returned home, sharlei nafshe, he would first release himself from the nidui, then v'adar sharlei lididei, and then afterwards he would take care of the young Talmid Chacham. So the way Tosafot explains it is because you can't have someone who's chayav take care of someone who's chayav. You have to be zakai in order to take care of him. So he released himself first, and then released the individual. Why did he put himself into nidui? Either mishum tzar, he felt bad about it. He wanted to show that it wasn't easy for him to do it, but it was necessary. So how does he show that? He puts himself into nidui, and then he puts the individual into nidui. And then the other possibility Tosafot raises is that why did he put himself into nidui? So that he would remember to release the other person from nidui. He just put the other person in nidui, he wouldn't be thinking about it. When he puts himself into nidui, he realizes that it's a serious issue and that he has to release him. That's the girsa that we have. The girsa of the Rabbeinu Chananel is actually the opposite. The Rabbeinu Chananel says, V'kach ha'ayol debeite, ha'vishari le'bereisha v'adushari le'nafshe. That he's consistent, that when he went home, he first released the other Talmud Chacham, and then released himself. So in both cases, he first put himself into nidui, then put the other Talmud Chacham into nidui, released the other Talmud Chacham, and then released himself. That would fit well with Tosafot's explanation that he wants to remember to take care of his other individual. So he remained in nidui as long as the other person was in nidui in order that he either was bitzar, that he was bitzar with his other person, or that he realized that he had to take care of it. And so he didn't release himself until he took care of the other individual. So that's Rabbeinu Chananel's girsa, which would be more like what you were suggesting, which is that maybe it should be consistent in both sides. Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav, Talmud Chacham minadeh li'atzmo, umefer li'atzmo. Talmud Chacham can put himself into nidui, and can release himself from nidui. So that was your question, is that possible? And the answer is yes. Amar Rav Papa, titili, delo shemiti tzumim rabbanu me'olam. Says, this should be in my credit, that I never put a young Talmud Chacham into nidui. Eleki kamechayim tzumim rabbanu shamta echiyavit. So then, what did he do? Look, we know there are going to be situations where some people require nidui, where people act inappropriately. So what did Rav Papa do in those situations? If he didn't put him into nidui, then how did he handle them? It's not right to sweep it under the cover. It's not right just to let it go. So what did he do? Ka demarova. He acted like those in Eretz Yisrael, which were mimnu anegida de tzumrim de rabbonon, lo mimnu ashamta. They used to gather together. They used to become a quorum to give malkot to a young Talmud Chacham and not put them into nidui. So the preferred methodology in Eretz Yisrael was to give the corporal punishment and not to put them into nidui. And that's what Rav Papa did also. He used to punish them, but he would not put them into nidui. My shamta. Now the Gemara just says, play on this word. What does shamta mean? That the Aramaic term for nidui is shamta. What is that? Amarav shem mita. It's a conjugation, a contraction of shem mita. It's like death. Like death, because the person is now isolated, segregated from the community, and that is like a death sentence when you are pushed out of the community. Ushmul amar shimamayeh, that this person should be, there should be desolation on this person. This is, wreak havoc on this person. Mahanyebei kitichya bitanura. And the shamta is effective like the fat that is basted inside of the oven. So when you baste the oven with the fat gets absorbed into the walls, and that remains there forever, and it flavors and is in the oven permanently, so too, that effectiveness of the shamta is the same way. Upligei de Reish Lakish. And he argues on Reish Lakish. Dam Reish Lakish, shem she nechneset b'matayim v'arbaim u'shmona evarim. Just like it goes in to 248 limbs, kach she yotza b'matayim v'arbaim u'shmona evarim. It leaves from all 248 limbs, meaning that when your person is put into nidui, it affects their entirety of their being. So too, when they are released from the shamta, it affects the entirety of their being. Shinichneset, when it goes in, dichtiv, aita, ir, cherim. So what is it? The city will be placed into cherim. Cherim be gematria. What is cherim in gematria? Matayim va'arbaim u'shmona, 248, which is the 248 limbs, havu. Shiyotza, dichtiv, v'regveiz, rachim, tiskor. And in your anger, remember your mercy. Rachim be gematria, chiyavu. By the word cherim and rachim are the same letters. So both in the way that it goes in, the cherim, and rachim, the way that it comes out. When it's merciful, it is removed entirely. So it does not leave a permanent mark, according to Reish Lakish. Whereas opposed to that, the way that Rav and Shmuel are reading it, it has impact. Amar Rav Yosef, Shaddai Shamta Agnufta de Kalba. You can place a Shamta Nidoy on the tail of the dog. Viodida Abda. It will do its job. I mean that you don't have to put the entirety of the dog into Nidoy, just put its tail in Nidoy, and then it'll affect the entirety of the dog. There was this dog was chewing up the shoes of the Chachamim. They didn't know who the dog was. They put him into Nidoy. Then his tail caught fire, and it consumed him and ate up the whole dog. The idea being that the power of this Nidoy is that you simply put them in the Nidoy and it does its job on its own. You don't have to do any more than that. How Alma? There was this strong man, Alima, that was giving problems to a young Talmud Chacham. Ata the Kamei de Rav Yosef, he came to Rav Yosef from Malay, Zil Shamte. Yosef gives advice to this young Talmud Chacham, put him into Nidoy. Malay Mistafina Mine. I'm afraid of him. He's a powerful person. I put him into Nidoy, he's going to make my life even more miserable. I mean, he's already causing me problems. I do this, he's going to make it completely unbearable. So I'm alay, shkile p'ticha, alay. Write down a shamta. Write it down. Document the shamta. Instead of saying it orally, write it down. So he goes, koshkein the mistafina mine. Then I'm certainly going to be in a problem situation. I write it down, it's going to be even more public. You know, people are going to get a hold of it. So I'm alay, shakle. Take it, achte bekado, put it into a pitcher, achte bekavre, and then take it into the cemetery, bikari be alfa shipure barbe yomin, and then blow the shofar 1,000 times means a lot, over the 40-day period. So, he says, do this in a more hidden manner, put him into nidoy, without making it a public matter. So he did this, goes ahead and does this, abid hochi, he went ahead and did this, pakakado. The pitcher blew up, broke into shards. Umit Alma. An indication of that, Hashem was going to take care of this, and the strong man died. And that the Nidoy took impact, or had impact on him, and he passed away. So, Alma, Umit Alma. My Shipure. Why do we blow the shofar when it comes to putting a person into Nidoy? We spoke about this before, about the public, making it a public matter, announcement. But here the Gemara plays on the word shofar and says, why do we do this? Shinifraim mimenu. The shofar is a hint that retribution is going to be taken on him, because shofar means poreya, to be paid back. My tavra, what does it mean that they break it? Now, the way that this indicates from the Gemara is that they not only blow a shofar of a tkiah, they blow a tkiah and a shvarim. So tkiah is represented by shipure, and tavra represents shvarim. So Amar Rav Yitzchak Vrei de Rav Yehuda, tavre batei rame. That the Nidoy takes down, destroys large houses. And that it's going to take impact. This is the hint of blowing the shofar, the tkiah and the shvarim, or the tkiah and the truah. Those sounds are an indication to this person that shipurei, he's going to be, retribution is going to be taken on him, and shvarim, he's going to be broken by this Nidoy. And so they see a hint in the blowing of the shofar. I don't think it detracts from what we said before, that it's also a publicization of the matter, but it's also, there's a hint. And the fact that the shofar indicates that this nidoy is going to take impact or make impact on this individual. Tanya, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, komakom shenu chachamim inehem omital oni. Whenever the chachamim put their eyes, putting their eyes means that someone's acting inappropriately and the chachamim are looking down upon this, or they're upset about the behavior, or they've affronted the Talmud Chacham, then when they look there, that's like an ayin hara, and what results from there is either death or poverty. That's something you don't want to do, if you don't want to cross the Talmud Chachamim. This idea that the Shamta or the Nidoy takes impact, or that their Ayin Hara has impact on the individual.
By putting something in Nidoy, it doesn't have to be a public event at all.
The main objective is to do it in public, so that it has impact on the individual. But here, where they can't do it publicly because the individual holds too much sway or power, then they do it privately. Being they get Hashem to put him into Nidoy. It's interesting that over here, there was the reason that he did it in the... So your question is, how does it work if it's done privately?
That's
so, my question. Right, so how does it work? So there are two possibilities. Before, the story said that he went to the cemetery to do it. So the way that Rashi on the Daf says it's the reason he went to the cemetery is so that nobody knows about it. It's a quiet place. People don't hang out there. There are others that suggest, I think it's Rashi and Taviyot also suggest this, he goes to the cemetery because they will become the public. that he does it with the meitim, and the meitim then will become the enforcers of the nidui. So he uses them as the public or the parties to the nidui, which is an interesting idea. But again, the nidui has two impacts. One effect of the nidui is that we're trying to convince the individual to retract or to back off of their position. In a situation where the person's not going to back off because they're too powerful, then the nidui is not going to have that effect. But the nidui can still be used by bringing Hashem in on the matter, meaning that the nidui can have impact from the punishment standpoint, even though it doesn't have the impact from the causing the individual to back off of their behavior or change their behavior. So since normally we want the person to retract or change their behavior, we do it publicly so that they back off and they change their behavior. But where it's a situation that it's not going to help because they won't back off or they're too powerful, it's actually caused more problems, then we do the nidui privately where we get Hashem involved, but the public as a whole can't be involved because it's not going to change the behavior. So I think that's how you have to explain the difference in the way that the nidui is working here. Is this a situation where they had no time before the moed? And therefore now, when they came onto the moed, this is the first time they can deal with their korbanot and cut their hair. Or delma, or maybe it's even a case where they had time before the moed, we're still going to allow them to do it on chol moed. It's a mishnah. The Mishnah says that this is all for people who did not have time beforehand. But if they had time beforehand, then it's asur. Nazir mitzora, afu pishalem panai, mutarim shlo yashu karbonotem. That when it comes to a nazir mitzora, even if they had the ability to do it beforehand, they're still permitted to do it on chol moed because we don't want them postponing their korbanot. Now, we're not postponing their korbanot is because they need to shave their head in order to bring their korbanot. So mitzora, that's oleh mituma letara, that's true. With a nazir, that is not as clear. Over here, the nazir, we're saying, according to most of the Rishonim, we're talking about a nazir who is tahor, that's to shave his head to bring his korbanot. There, it's not necessarily obligation to cut his hair, because he only has to cut his hair to put it under the shlamim. Although, that is the general practice. That's how most Rishonim learned it. But you remember Rashi on the Mishnah said there was also a nazir who was tameh. And in that case, he is obligated to shave his head, because the Torah says he must shave his head before he goes back to his nazirut in order to be tahor. So in that case, it is an obligation. He can't bring his korbanot until he shaves his head. So because of that, we don't want him postponing his korbanot anymore. So therefore, we allow him to do it, even though he had opportunity to do it before the regal, he can still do it on chol moed. Tana, hakohen va'avel mutarim b'giluach. A kohen and avel are allowed to shave or get their hair cut. Hai avel hechidami. What's the case of this avel? Ilei meshachal shmini shelo be'erev regel. You say that it was the eighth day of his mourning period that fell out on before the regel. He should have shaved before Yom Tov, and therefore we're not going to allow him to shave on Yom Tov or to cut his hair on Yom Tov because he should have done it before Yom Tov. That's the whole reason we say you can't do it on Yom Tov, is because we want you to do it beforehand. And here he had the opportunity to do it. Turns out that Erev HaRegel was Shabbat, and that was the eighth day of his mourning period. So the way it says, Yibaylo Legluche Erev Shabbat. He should have shaved or taken a haircut on Erev Shabbat. The locha is like Abba Shaul. And not only is the locha like Abba Shaul, modim chachamim la Abba Shaul. The chachamim agreed to the position of Abba Shaul, but shchal shmini shalo liyop is Shabbat. When the eighth day of your mourning falls out on Shabbat, Erev HaRegel, shemutar legaleach v'Erev Shabbat, that you're allowed to cut your hair or shave on Erev Shabbat. So that's the story here. What's going on? So what's going on here is that one is not allowed to cut their hair during Shiva, and one is not allowed to cut the hair during Shloshim, neither of them. But the regel will cut off a part of this. Now, the way the Gemara is learning now is that the regel will only cut off Shloshim if he's already entered into Shloshim. He's already have to start Shloshim. So when do you start Shloshim? According to the Gemara right now, it's only the Shmini Shalo. On the eighth day, he keeps the full 7 days of Shiva. The eighth day begins the shloshim. If he hits the regel will terminate the shloshim, and now he's allowed to cut his hair. Since the regel will terminate his shloshim, and he's already started his shloshim, he's allowed to cut his hair right before the regel. Because he already started shloshim, regel is going to break it. Right now, the Gemara says, because it's going to get cut off, in kavod haregel, we allow you to cut beforehand. Because if we say, oh, okay, wait, regel cuts it off, cut it on chol moed, you've defeated the whole purpose of allowing him to cut his hair. So then we say, before the regel, cut your hair, because you've got rid of shloshim. But if he never got out of Shiva, then we're not going to allow him to cut his hair, because then the regel will cut off Shiva, it will not cut off the Shloshim, and he'll still be bound by the Shloshim. Even though the regel came and it stopped the Avelut, nevertheless, the way the Gemara is learning now, unless you practice a portion of the Shloshim, you do not have that dispensation to cut your hair. So now, the Gemara explained it so far, is that the eighth day fell out on Erev HaRegel. Well, if the eighth day fell out on Erev HaRegel, why is he allowed to cut his hair during Chol HaMoed? He should have cut it before the regel. And if you had the opportunity to cut it and you didn't, it's your problem now. We're not going to let you cut it. Now, the Gemara says, okay, you know what the case was? It was Shabbat. Your eighth day was Shabbat. The problem is on Shabbat, you can't cut your hair. The Shloshim was started on the eighth day, which was Shabbat, which was Erev HaRegel. So he had no opportunity to do it. So that's why he could do it on Chol HaMoed. The Gemara says, no, because now we hold like Abba Shaul, and even the Chachamim agree to Abba Shaul in that case, that you can cut your hair on Erev Shabbat. So because of Kavod Shabbat and Kavod HaRegel, we allow you to back it up onto the seventh day, the end of the seventh day, the last day of his Shiva, we allow him to do it. Now, that's what we learned so far. What is this Machlokes between Abba Shaul and the Chachamim? That's what you just raised, which is the issue of Mixat Hayom Kikulo. So now we're going to have the case where it's the seventh day, and this is where the difference will come up. So, Tzricha Shechal Shvi Shelo Liot B'Shabbat Erev HaRegel. It's a case where the seventh day fell out on Shabbat, which was Erev HaRegel. Tana Baros Sover Lak Abba Shaul. The outside Braita holds like Abba Shaul. Damar Mixat Hayom Kikulo. B'Yom Shvi Ole Lo Lekan Ulekan. Since Mixat Hayom Kikulo, that means that on the seventh day, your Shiva terminates in the beginning of the day. Once your Shiva terminates, then the Shloshim already kicks in. Shloshim kicks in, then the regel is going to terminate the Shloshim. Your seventh day is on Shabbat. So on the seventh day, the morning of Shabbat, the Avelut is now over, and the Shloshim has started, and the regel will knock it off. But that's on Shabbat, and you can't do anything about it on Shabbat. So we allow you on Erev Shabbat to cut your hair. That's what the Braita holds. The game of the Shabbat, Abi Anusu, since Shabbat is a case where you can't cut and he's an Anus, therefore he can now cut his hair on the regel itself. Because he had no opportunity. There was no opportunity for him to do it beforehand. We're not going to let him do it on Erev Shabbat. That's already back on the sixth day. It's the middle of his Shiva. That we're not going to let him do. So because he didn't have the opportunity to cut his hair beforehand, we're going to let him cut it on the regel. But our Tana, Sabar Lakir Albonon, Darmi Lo Amrina Mixat Hayom Kikulo. We don't say Mixat Hayom Kikulo. Therefore, the seventh day that falls out on Shabbat is only Shiva. He never enters into Shloshim. His Shloshim was never terminated. So he's still bound by his Shloshim. He can't cut his hair. Vakati lo shalim avelut to Shiva, since he didn't finish up his Shiva, so therefore he can't get a haircut because his Shloshim was not terminated by the regel. So this is machlok between Abba Shaul and the Chachamim, by the way, that we say Mixat Hayom Kikulo. That's what the Gemara said before. If his eighth day falls out on Shabbat, even the Chachamim agree that's enough of a reason to say that you can say Mixat Hayom Kikulo and back it up to Erev Shabbat, that he can do the haircut on Erev Shabbat, even though he's still in Shiva at that point in time. Because there we say Mixat Hayom Kikulo like Abba Shaul, even according to the Chachamim. We don't say it is in a case where the seventh day falls out on Shabbat, Erev HaRegel. There, Abba Shaul says Mixat Hayom Kikulo, he started Shloshim. Chachamim say he didn't start Shloshim because we don't say Mixat Hayom Kikulo. Two things to note over here. One is, how is it possible that the eighth day of mourning falls out on Shabbat? If the eighth day falls out on Shabbat, that means that he was buried on Shabbat. If you bury on Shabbat, your Shiva will end on Friday. That means that your eighth day will be Shabbat. The only way to have an eighth day be on Shabbat is if you bury it on Shabbat. So how is that possible? How do you bury a mate on Shabbat? Nobody buries a mate on Shabbat. So Tosafot brings two possibilities. One possibility is that it's a Shmua Krova. Shmua Krova is you weren't there, you were not present at the burial, but you get the information within 30 days of the burial. Then when you get the information, when you get the news, you're Noheg Shiva from the time that you get the news. So that's what's called a Shmua Krova. It was still within the early period of the morning. And you get the information, you start your Shiva then. So he got the information on Shabbat. So he starts his Shiva on Shabbat. That's one possibility. Or the Yerushalmi brings a different explanation, which is actually something that happened just recently in the war in Gaza, which is Yerushalmi Mukila Shigarato Chaya. A wild animal dragged him, Yashu Levakesh. And they did not go after him. Demonim Lavashachin Yashu. They go after him when they give up hope that they can retrieve the body. So this happened with Hadar Golden. If you just replace the word Chaya here with Hamas, it's the exact same thing, where his body was dragged into the tunnel, and once they determined that he was clearly dead, and they were mityayesh from retrieving the body, his parents said Shiva at that time. It happened to be there, it was on Motzei Shabbat, that they declared him to have passed away, and they began the Shiva on Motzei Shabbat. But had it been on Shabbat, had they had Yeush, then that would be exactly this case, where the Shiva would have started on Shabbat because they had given up the hope of retrieving a body and burying the body. So that could happen on Shabbat. The next thing to talk about is Mitzvah de Yom Kikulo. We've spoken about this in the past, that in Torah Adam, the Ramban discusses this. What does it mean, Mitzvah de Yom Kikulo? When we say a portion of the day is like the whole day, what does that mean? Does that mean that when you start into the seventh day, we give you a dispensation to say it's as if you did the whole seventh day? But if you so choose, you could practice the whole seventh day. This is a kula. The kula is that if you don't want to keep the whole seventh day, Mitzvah de Yom Kikulo, and therefore it's enough to do a part of the day. But if you so choose, you could do the whole day. Or does Mitzvah de Yom Kikulo really terminate the Avelut and say, since Mitzvah de Yom Kikulo, therefore your Avelut is terminated? Now that it's terminated, you don't have an option anymore. There is no more Avelut. If you want to keep Avelut past that point in time, you're not an Avel. In a sense, a waste of time. You're doing something that is not Avelut. Because Mitzvah de Yom Kikulo says the Avelut just stopped. It's over. And that's what the Ramban queries or discusses is Mitzvah de Yom Kikulo taken as a dispensation? Or is Mitzvah de Yom Kikulo changed the facts on the ground? And literally, Mitzvah de Yom Kikulo means that your Shiva has ended. It's as if the day was completed, as if you did Kulo, and now you move on as if it's the next day. And that's something to discuss over here, which is the way that Mitzvah de Yom Kikulo is working. Hi, Kohen, Eichi Dami. What's the case of the Kohen that can shave on Chol HaMoed? That's Mishmar ended. He was working in the Mikdash, and Mishmar ended on Erev HaRegel. He bailed Legluche Erev HaRegel. Then he should have shaved before the Regel, and therefore he shouldn't be allowed to do it on Chol HaMoed. Lo Tzricha, the Shalom Mishmar Tov HaRegel. His Mishmar ended in the middle of the Regel. Tani Didan Savar, our Tano, our Mishnah things, came into Tznan. Shosha Prakim Mishnah, Yavu Kol Mishmarot Shavot. 3 times a year, all the Mishmarot are Shavot. Bemurei HaRegelim. And on the regel, all the Mishmarot come and work together. Even though it was the time period of one of the Mishmarot, everybody comes in. B'chiluk lechem apanim. They get a portion of the lechem apanim. Kaman delo shalom mishmarto b'regel dami. Therefore, it's as if he didn't finish his Mishmar on the regel. Since all the Mishmarot are joined together on the regel, as if his Mishmar ended before the regel. And even though it continues into the regel because he works with the other Mishmarot, nevertheless, it's not as if he had the right to shave on Chol HaMoed because his Mishmar ended then. It didn't really. It really ended before the regel. So they can't shave on Chol HaMoed. But Tana Baro, the bright that says the Kohen can't shave, Sabra Afagav the Shayach Mahanach Mishmarot, even though he's Shayach to all the Mishmarot that work on the regel, Mishmarte Miyashlimele. His Mishmar ended now. And since his Mishmar ended now, he can shave now on Chol HaMoed because his Mishmar terminated. Even though technically, he's still a part of all the other Mishmarot at that time, and his Mishmar really ended on Erev HaRegel, because from this point forward, everybody else is going to join him. Nevertheless, that's not considered as if he ended it. It's as if it ended now. By the way, this change has to be on Shabbat, because Mishmarot only turn over on Shabbat. That's when the Mishmarot turn over. So the question is, if Shabbat falls out in the middle of the Regel, what's the status of this individual? Is he allowed to shave now, because his Mishmar ended now? Or is it as if his Mishmar ended on Erev HaRegel, because everybody else can come join him, and it's not as if his Regel, he should have taken care of it beforehand. If he didn't, because it was impossible, because his Mishmar was then, he doesn't have a right to do it on Chol HaMoed. Tana Banana. Kol Elu Shamru Mutarim Legaleach Moed, Mutarim Legaleach Mimei Avlan. Anybody who's mutar to get a haircut or shave on Chol HaMoed is also mutar to shave when they are an Avel. Va'atanya Surim. Don't we have a bright that says that's not the case? That you can't shave when you're an Avel. It says, Amrav Chista, Amrav Shila, Kitanya Ocha Mutarim. When you say it's mutar, Mishtakfua Avilav, when he has back-to-back Avilut. Ikishtakfua Avilav, my Iria Kol Elu. Why is it just these people mentioned our Mishnah? Kishamru, Afilu Kli Alma, Nami. Anybody. When you have back-to-back Avilut, you have a dispensation then to cut your hair, to Tanya. Takfua Avilav, if you have back-to-back Avilut, Zechazeh, one after the other, Hichbid Zaro, if his hair became very heavy, he's overgrown now, Mekel Batar, he's allowed to take it off with a razor. He's allowed to launder his clothing in water, but not in detergent or with soap, but he can do it with water. That when you're back-to-back Avelut, everybody has a dispensation to deal with these issues because it's just too much already. So then why do you need these specific people? So I says, you're only allowed to do it with a razor, not with scissors. You're allowed to do it with water, but not with soap, detergent, or aloe. So therefore, what's the dispensation? The dispensation is that for these individuals, they're even allowed to cut with scissors. They're even allowed to launder with detergent. So that's why these individuals, when you have both a back-to-back avilut plus this additional item that they came from overseas, they were freed from prison, whatever the issue is, that gives them an additional heter to do things normally and not just in this manner of a shinui. Amrav Chista, Zot Omeret, from this you conclude, Avel Asur B'Tisboset. That from here you see that only when it was back-to-back Avilut were you allowed to launder, means that normally an Avel may not launder his clothing. It's interesting because the Gemara just yesterday said that the source for Avilut, or not laundering Avilut, is from the Ishat Koait that we saw by Yoav. So here the Gemara, he says that he concludes this from the Braita. Tanar Banan, Shem Shamru Asur L'Galeach M'Moed, Kakasur L'Tol Tziparnai M'Moed. Just like one is not allowed to cut one's hair on Chol HaMoed, one is not allowed to cut their nails on Chol HaMoed, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi Matir. Rabbi Yossi says it's mutar. Shem Shamru Avel Asur L'Galeach M'Moed Lo. Just like an Avel may not shave his head or cut his hair on his Avilut, Kakasur L'Tol Tziparnai M'Moed Lo. He's also not allowed to cut his nails when he's an Avel, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi Matir. In both these cases, Rabbi Yossi is Matir. In both these cases, Rabbi Yehuda says cutting one's nails is identical to cutting one's hair, and Rabbi Yossi says it's not. Amrula alocha k'Rabbi Yehuda b'Avel. The alocha is like Rabbi Yehuda with an Avel that he may not cut his nails. Alocha Rabbi Yossi b'Moed. And alocha is like Rabbi Yossi on Chol HaMoed that you can cut your nails. Shmuel Amar alocha k'Rabbi Yossi b'Moed u'b'Avel. That alocha is like Rabbi Yossi in both cases, both on Chol HaMoed and in Avelut. Damar Shmuel alocha k'Divrei HaMekel b'Avel. So Loch is always like the leaning opinion with Avelut. This is what Tosafot brings as his proof that Avelut must be Derabanan. Because why are we paskening the Kula in all these cases? Because it must be that it's a case Derabanan. Similar statement that Shmuel makes by Eruvin. That the Loch is like the Mekel in Eruvin because Eruvin is only a Din Derabanan. This is Tosafot's Shita that Avelut must be Derabanan because of this. But he paskens the Kula would be like Rabbi Yossi. That means both on Chol HaMoed and in Avelut, one is allowed to cut their nails. So Loch, the Shulchan Aruch brings it down. Yes, you're allowed to cut your nails, but you have to do it in a shinoi, in a manner that it's a shinoi. You can bite them, you can pick them off, you can't cut them with scissors, you can't do it with a kli to take off the nails. There might be an exception with an isha nida. She has to go to the mikveh, and she needs to cut her nails, and she can't do it properly without using a kli. Then you may be able to use another Jew or a nachri to cut them for you. There are ways around it, but generally we don't cut the nails during the Chol HaMoed, and we don't cut nails on Avelut. If it's absolutely necessary, you have to do it derech shinoi. Okay, we'll stop over here on the second line on Daf Yud Chet.